From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. This week, we look at which regions of the state bring in the biggest fish bucks, and the results may surprise you. Also, a huge mine that could cause big changes for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta leaps a major hurdle. A Kodiak village hopes to entice residents back by rebuilding its fishing industry. And you got a great fishing photo? A National Fishing Magazine is looking for entries for its upcoming calendar. All that and more coming up on this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits. Marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Here's a quick question. Let's see if you can answer it. Which region provides the most fish bucks to the state of Alaska? In Alaska's fisheries, the regions of Southeast, Cook Inlet, Bristol Bay, and Kodiak attract the most attention. But it turns out that the more far-flung and remote areas provide some of the state's biggest fish bucks, notably the Bering Sea and the Aleutian Islands region, called the BSAI. A new McDowell Group report measures the statewide economic impacts of shoreside processing operations in Dutch Harbor, St. Paul, King Cove, Send Point, False Pass, and other small communities. Alaska Fish Radio's Lainey Welch crunched the numbers.
It turns out that approximately 30% of the seafood industry's total economic impact in Alaska can be attributed to BSAI, inshore processing, and related fishing activity, adding up to nearly $1.6 billion in 2016. 44% of all seafood processing wages paid in Alaska stem from that region, totaling almost $440 million. And a whopping 56% of all fish taxes paid in Alaska, including fisheries business tax and taxes levied by local governments, totaled nearly $60 million. Unalaska Dutch Harbor, with a population of about 4,300, is the largest community in the region. 47% of the town's workers were employed in seafood processing. All other communities have fewer than 1,000 residents. The seasonality and huge volumes of seafood require bringing in workers from elsewhere, but the proportion of Alaska residents on the job has increased from 17% to 24% since 2006.
Alaska Fish Radio's Lainey Welch.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
In other news, a huge proposed gold mine in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta cleared a major hurdle this week. Alaska's Energy Desk's Christy Schallenberger has details from Anchorage.
It was a big day for Donlin Gold.
You know, in the spirit of this joint record decision, it's really about federal agencies working together and coming together and coming up with quicker decisions.
That's David Hobby of the Army Corps of Engineers Alaska District. Hobby and other top federal officials joined representatives from the mining industry and Native corporations at their Anchorage office to commemorate the occasion. It took 6 years of environmental review, but Donlin Gold has finally received two major permits from the Army Corps and Bureau of Land Management. Donlin is trying to develop one of the biggest gold mines in the world. Because the mine would impact thousands of acres of wetlands, it needed a permit from the Army Corps. The plans also include a 315-mile-long gas pipeline, which crosses over federal land run by the BLM, so it needed a permit from them as well. For two Native corporations, the permits means that the YK Delta could get more jobs.
This is one of those steps that we need in order to improve the conditions we have out in the region.
Andrew Guy is the CEO of the Chilista Regional Native Corporation, which leased the subsurface rights to Donlin Gold. But Donlin is facing growing opposition from YK Delta tribes. Nearly a dozen have passed anti-mine resolutions in the past 2 years. The tribes fear the mine could damage their subsistence lifestyle, and they fear a mine accident could contaminate the Kuskokwim River, a vital food source. The Uruchagachmut Native Council and the local working group called the Yukon-Kuskokwim River Alliance both oppose the mine, and they released a statement saying the permitting process left out many voices from the region. Andrew Guy of Calista says their concerns have been heard throughout the process.
In Calista ourselves, being workers, employees, and board members, we are involved with subsistence too for our own families. So that's a very valid concern that we've always kept in the top of our heads.
The gold mine needs at least 100 permits before it can start mining. Donlin Gold says they plan to get their other major ones out of the way this year, and the rest could be completed in 2 years. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Christy Schallenberger in Anchorage.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
One critical factor in a successful fishing industry is transportation. It's one thing to catch and even process fish, but that has no meaning if you can't get the fish out of remote regions to markets in urban areas. The village of Old Harbor on Kodiak Island wants to rebuild its fishing industry to provide jobs and entice locals to return and resettle in the isolated town. Now, village leaders hope that a brand new runway extension will make it possible to support a seafood processing facility that their community has been pursuing for over 20 years. The village of Old Harbor held a ribbon-cutting ceremony last week for an airport extension that nearly doubles the length of the current airfield, which will allow large aircraft to land, aircraft that it is hoped will someday fly seafood directly from Old Harbor to markets in the lower 48. Daisha Eaton in Kodiak was there for the celebration and has this story.
Under blue skies, a red ribbon is stretched between two stakes, beyond which service members who helped build the runway stand at attention.
Blessed is our God always, now and ever.
Father Yosef, Old Harbor's Orthodox priest, sprinkles holy water and blesses the runway. Carl Mars, CEO of Old Harbor Native Corporation, addresses the crowd and thanks Alaska's congressional delegation, the state of Alaska, and the military.
The airport extension will help us to build a healthy community in Old Harbor for many generations to come. We work diligently to have a sustainable community where a family can make a decent living and raise their children close to their cultural roots and subsistence lifestyle.
Then Congressman Don Young, holding a giant pair of scissors, cuts the ribbon. The purpose of the runway extension is to send out air freight from the community's future seafood processor. Earlier in the day, dignitaries arrived to celebrate the runway's completion, many on a Marine Corps C-130. Leaders hope the runway will receive many more large planes in the future, carrying local seafood back out of Old Harbor straight to market. Eventually, everyone ended up at the school, where they shared a meal of locally caught Tanner crab, king and silver salmon, and deer stew with local people. Then heard from the mayor.
Thank you all for coming. And we're here to celebrate the completion of our Old Harbor Airport expansion and safety project.
Mayor Rick Burns is a commercial fisherman who's lived in the Aleutic Village, originally called Nunyuk, on the east side of Kodiak since the 70s.
When I first came down here, we had a 1,700-foot runway. It was one of the few runways in the island at the time, and most of the island was served by gooses and seaplanes.
In the early 90s, they relocated the runway to where it is now and expanded it. As residents moved out, leaders realized they needed to do something.
We have about 220 people population. We've had, when I first moved down here, there was 300. I think it was up to about 330. And we've had a population in our school of 120 kids, students. Now we're down to 30, it might be even in the upper 20s on the student population. So you could see where that loss of population had us concerned as a leadership group.
The runway is phase three of a five-part plan. They already built a new boat harbor and replaced their dock. With the runway done, the next step will be to establish hydropower to provide cheaper electricity, then build the plant. The hope is that the economic development project will bring community members home to work and allow young people who go off to college the opportunity to return to run the plant. They're not yet sure what they'll process due to instability of the Gulf fisheries, low salmon returns, and the collapse of the cod fishery. But they're considering all options, including the emerging kelp industry. In Old Harbor, I'm Daisha Eaton.
And finally this week, a chance for great fishermen photographers to have their photos plastered on a 2019 calendar. Bill Forsland is the advertising sales manager for Fisherman's News. He and his team are on the lookout for the best 12 photos to highlight the West Coast fishing industry. Fisherman's News is the oldest fishing publication and has been the voice of the commercial fishing industry since 1945. Forsland loves that the calendar captures the hardworking men and women in the industry and is seen by thousands of people throughout the year. They are pretty flexible in their needs, any commercial fishing-related photos, from scenic shots to action shots. They are asking for high quality, though, high resolution, and horizontal laid-out photos. Winners are announced every year at the Fisherman's News booth at Pacific Marine Expo in Seattle. Photo credits are given to the photographer, along with a few prizes. The winners receive $150, 25 calendars to share with family and friends, and they also get bragging rights at the bar because their picture was in Fisherman's News calendar. Plus, they get a one-year subscription to the Fisherman's News magazine.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska fishermen and their families. MC@AMSEA.org or 907-747-3287.
That's it for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from Lainey Welch at Alaska Fish Radio, Christy Schallenberger with Alaska's Energy Desk, and Daisha Eaton here at KMXT in Kodiak. As always, a big thank you to everyone who makes this show possible each week, as well as all the fishermen and fishery workers throughout Alaska. From the guy in the skiff to the gal in the processing plant's quality control lab. From the sales folks at the gear places to the stores that sell and promote Alaska's wild-caught fish. These are the people that make it all possible and make it all come together for Alaska's fisheries and our fishermen. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Maggie Wall.